Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. On today's show, contributor Amanda Moore interviews Melissa Rivero, author of Flores and Miss Paula.
Today, I am speaking with Melissa Rivero. Melissa Rivero is the author of The Affairs of the Falcons, winner of the 2019 New American Voices Award and a 2020 International Latino Book Award. The book was also longlisted for the Penn Hemingway Award for Debut Novel, the Center for Fiction's First Novel Prize, and the Aspen Words Literary Prize. Her most recent novel, Flores and Miss Paula, was published in December 2023. Born in Lima, Peru, and raised in Brooklyn, she is a graduate of NYU and Brooklyn Law School, where she was an editor of the Brooklyn Law Review. Melissa still lives in Brooklyn with her family. Melissa, welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you, Amanda. I'm very happy to be here.
Oh, we're glad to have you here. I had a chance to read this wonderful book, and I would love for you just to kind of give a quick summary about it before we get started.
Sure. Flores and Miss Paula is a book about a mother and a daughter who are essentially reevaluating their relationship to each other and to themselves in the 3 years after the death of the patriarch, the father, husband, Martin. It takes place in Brooklyn in 2017. It really does center this mother-daughter relationship and how it needs to evolve given where they are in their lives.
Now, how did you decide on the title? I think I know, because of the daughter and the mother, but how did you decide to make that the title of your book?
Well, Flores is what they call, what the folks at the daughter's job call her. Her name is actually Monica Yolanda Flores. There are too many Monicas in her workplace. And so they just decide to call her by her last name. And that's what she's known as at work, as Flores. Miss Paula is what the mother, Paula, is called at her workplace. She works at a discount store in their neighborhood. And I decided on those two names as the title because I felt like they, in many ways, their jobs and their professional lives really affect who they think that they are and their goals. And they sort of have to actually, in some ways, embrace that, but then also shed that.
I love that. What inspired you to write this story about this relationship?
When I first started writing it, it was actually in a short story class. The class is called The Art of the Short Story, and it's the teacher's Laura Pegram from Qualey, who's amazing. And I wrote this short story, which ended up being a scene in the novel. And it was about Flores. And so I thought, oh, I like this person. Like, she's very interesting to me. I see a lot of people in my ambit who remind me of her. And I kind of wanted to follow her. I thought she was really interesting. And so I expanded on that scene and it became multiple scenes. And then as I was writing, I kept hearing this woman kind of criticizing her. It was almost like, I don't say, a little bit like that. It was kind of like when you're at a party and your auntie is like sitting next to you and like whispering about that cousin or that tia and just like gossiping. It kind of felt like that. And so I thought, okay, her mother has a lot to say about her life because it was, to me, clearly came across as like her mother's voice. And by that point, I had already written like a dialogue between Flores and Paula. So I knew it was her mother. But then the voice kept getting louder and louder. And I'm like, okay, this person, I need to really just put down what she's saying. I was almost like channeling her. And then as I started writing more about what Paula had to say, I started to realize that it was really not a story just about Flores, but it was a story about their relationship.
And I really like the way you craft their culture into the novel itself. And when I say that, it's a Peruvian culture. So the mom's from Peru. And you incorporate, I love this, I'm going to say I love this a lot, you incorporate Spanish phrases and dialogue into the text, but you do it in a way that even if a person is not a Spanish speaker, you write it in a way they can understand what's being said, like incorporating it. Was that something you intended on doing from the very beginning, or was that something that you decided to do after you wrote the book?
No, it's definitely something that comes as I write. Spanish is my first language. It is, one of the official languages of Peru. So I really felt like I couldn't not include it in some form in my writing. I'm Peruvian, right? I was born in Peru. I grew up in a very Peruvian household. Dinner was Peruvian food. Weekends we're hanging out with our Peruvian friends. We celebrated big holidays in Peru. So growing up, I didn't see very much Peruvian writers or characters. It just wasn't what I was exposed to. And so for me, writing about my culture and incorporating the language is just very natural. That's my default. I think we all have, our sort of default when we view the world. And that's where I'm coming from. Peru is also very diverse, ethnically, racially. And so Paula is from La Amazona, which is like the rainforest, like the Amazon in Peru, which is where my mother is from. I feel like that I also didn't, if I don't see Peruvians in literature in the United States, like I'm certainly not going to see someone who's from a particular region in Peru. So I really wanted that. And Paula and Flores's father is Afro-Peruvian. And to me, it was important to also include representation from that group in some form, because it's another one that isn't well represented in literature here in America, Afro-Peruvians. And I admit I haven't read a lot of Peruvian literature, but it historically, Afro-Peruvians, the indigenous population of Peru, have been marginalized. And I felt like it was important to have that presence, their presence in my work.
Well, and I could really appreciate the richness of the culture that you were bringing to the book. I mean, you had food and traditions. I almost felt like I needed some recipes for certain things that I heard about, because I thought that was so great. And you weaved it into the narrative so that we felt like it was, we were a part, like that you're right there in the room with them with the story. So I want to segue into where Flores worked for a living, and she worked at a startup company. And I really thought this was really interesting, because we have so many startups right now with so much tech and investments. You had a lot of language in there that I could tell you did your research, because the certain things with investments and things with companies, can you tell us a little about, your process for writing about a startup culture that has investors?
So I worked at a startup, full disclosure, for many years. and it's interesting, because I also worked at a nonprofit before that. And in some ways they're kind of similar, in the sense that everything is very, you're kind of trying to, you're very much responsible to the board, right? Like, and you have like, you're trying to reach a goal. You're trying to like do a lot with little in some ways. And with the startup, sometimes that money, I feel like, is invested in places that probably shouldn't be, or that aren't the wisest, but that feel like they are for whatever reason to the leaders. And it's a lot of, it's people trying to do a lot, right? Who maybe don't necessarily have all the experience or the right guidance, or who, but they're well-meaning. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're equipped to do the things that they want to do. But it's also like very exciting, right? To think that you're going to bring something into the world that is revolutionary or different or helping people and or adding value to a person in some way or another. And so in this case, this startup, you know, the people who worked at the company really felt like they were bringing beauty into the life of overstressed workers, right? By like, yeah, here's an aquarium with like a beautiful fish and stuff. But the reality is that behind the scenes, there's a lot of, I don't want to say, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it that like people don't see. And like, it's not that different from these other big corporations where you have the machinations and all of that happen. But having worked at a startup, it definitely, I had at least some insight into the different aspects of Flores's job in particular.
That's a very good point, because you have the part that's about a vision, but you have the business side, which is what Flores works in. She's the finance person, and it all comes down to the numbers at some point. And so she's the one who is looking over this. So there are parts that I was really glad to see. It was tough to read, but glad to see that you talked about microaggressions of women in the workplace. Just the little comments about where they're from, or little comments that the women had to do with the men, as far as like that dialogue. Just it only happened for a second, but I could see you kind of highlighted it was very realistic of how quickly someone can say something to you that's disrespectful, but then you don't know if you were disrespected or not.
Yes.
Yeah. So can you tell us about writing about microaggressions? Because people are becoming more aware that they do exist, and it happens very quickly, and you're not paranoid. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, those are hard, because you do some, when you get them, you're kind of just like, did that happen? Did I be offended? Yeah. And then you reflect on it and you're like, man, I wish I had a better comeback. I wish I had a comeback to begin with. Like, I wish I had checked them in that moment. But it does happen, you know, obviously. I think that people are becoming more aware of them. I still feel like people tend to, there's a sense of like, oh no, not me. I'm not saying any, like, but why is that offensive? You know, like, I had someone once tell me that I should include smiley emojis in my emails to soften my tone. And I remember thinking, what? Somebody else's, because another female was doing it. And I'm like, well, why do I need to do that? Like, are you telling the guys to do that? Like, well, why do I need to do it? Right. And it was just, and it wasn't, and I don't think the person was coming from I think they were actually trying to be like softened, like maybe you're coming off a little too harsh. But like, then again, I don't know if that would have, if he would have had that same conversation with a man. I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have. And there are other instances too, where like, you know, someone perceived a person of color as screaming. And I'm like, did you ever think that maybe like, that's just how they talk? Because certainly that's just how, I mean, in my culture, this is how you talk. Like, I'm not screaming at you, but like, but they didn't, it just wasn't registering. So I don't know. I mean, it is hard to write about sometimes, but on the other hand, I did want to show people that this stuff does happen, and you may not realize it, but it is, you are doing it.
Exactly. And so the daughter, Flores, so she's a young professional and she appears to be very focused on her job, and her mother is concerned about her working too hard. However, the mother is just as focused on her job as her daughter is. So were you trying, in describing their relationship, were you trying to show a distinction, but also how very similar they were at the same time?
Yes. The reality is that we all do find some sense of purpose in our work. I mean, ideally, we would, right? We spend so many hours of our day in our workplace, in our jobs, that ideally it is meaningful to us. And I think that both of these women were trying to find, I think one was trying to find meaning in it, and I think the other inadvertently found meaning in it. And so it can be in many ways something that helps you process, that helps you, that grounds you. On the other hand, it can be a crutch at times, right? If you just are solely relying on this one thing to get you through the day, or, you know, at worst, to like define you as a person, especially with these type, you know, I say I'm a type A personality too, so I'm including myself in this, but those of us that are like very type A, I can see how we can very easily get lost in identifying only with our careers or with our professions, and not really seeing that we're actually complex, multifaceted people, and we need to nurture all aspects of ourselves, not just the job or the career.
That's good. That's actually very true, because that's how the characters were, right? And so there is another part that you have, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I have that Flores is first person, but the
yes.
mother is almost like, is it second? The way
yes.
it's like she's talking to her daughter. It felt like she was even writing a letter to her daughter.
Right.
Why did you choose these two different perspectives for both characters?
I think that sometimes it's hard for us to be honest with ourselves. Sometimes it's easier to do it if we're writing to somebody else, if we're journaling, or, you know, there are some things that we can't say to others, and so we write them down instead, because we just can't vocalize it. We don't have the I don't want to say the courage, but we don't have the ability to communicate in that way for whatever reason. And I think that for Flores, it was always first. The writing came to me in first person, and I very much, as the author, needed to be in her, very much like focused. Focused way of being, and so first seemed natural for her. Whereas with Paula, there were a lot of things that Paula felt like she needed to tell her daughter, and things that she needed to confront for herself that just didn't, she just couldn't get the words out. She was whispering them to me, and like, even that felt like, it felt like she was with, like, this character was just whispering them to me. And so it felt like, and she was all, and if you know, in the novel, she like, she writes like little prayers down. Mm-hmm. And so it felt like the only way for her to communicate to herself, to her daughter, was through second address, direct address, which is the second person.
And so when I was reading this, I noticed that Flores's relationship with her dad, and you tell us up front, Martin, he has passed. And so you're dealing with the grief of a wife and a daughter. But the reflection is her relationship with her dad was very different than the one with her mother. In fact, she says in one scene, "I'm still trying to be the person he wanted me to be." Right. And so why did you highlight the relationship in this way? The father-daughter relationship.
Yeah, I think that he was very much the connection between the mother and the daughter. And I think in many ways, Flores, like a lot of first generation kids, you know, want to, I'm sorry, my son.
Oh, you're
you heard that. Okay.
It was perfectly timed. First generation,
okay.
And then a son's voice.
Okay.
It was cute.
Yes.
You're fine.
you know, you want to live up to your parents' expectations of you. I mean, I think we all do, but there's this sense when you're like a first gen, like your parents gave up so much to come to this country for you to have a better future than you would have had. Right. And so, and Flores, in her mind, has this idea that her father wanted her to be a certain thing, right? Wanted her to make money, wanted her to have like a career, wanted her to have these degrees or whatever. And she's still living with that. She still thinks that that is what she needs to do to live up to his expectations. When that isn't really the case anymore, because he has passed away, and because a lot of those expectations really never existed.
And I also felt that Flores, like many of us, it's hard to see yourself clearly. She thought she was just a hard worker, but her mother, when she's describing her, sees her as beyond stressed out and maybe a bit of a workaholic. Do you think that that's an important message to convey, that while people think they are fine, they really aren't?
Yes, especially as women, I think that we sometimes tend to push ourselves and say yes more than we should. And I think that's society's fault. I think that we're in many ways, you know, culturally conditioned to always say yes and be these, you know, people who are always giving, you know, in some ways we're constantly trying to break that glass ceiling. It is important to have perspective, and there's certainly nothing wrong with having like ambition. I mean, we all should have, you know, and striving for things, but at some point, I think it is important to, you know, listen to people who are well-meaning and who only have our best interest at heart. If they're checking us, then maybe it's okay to listen and be like, oh, maybe my mom has a point. Maybe I do need a vacation or something, or I need to like pump the brakes a little bit with work. When you're that age though, when you're working in a kind of culture that is a startup culture, like when that age, I mean, like, you know, in your 20s, early 30s, whatever, like you're so in it. You're so into the work, and the workplace becomes like your social scene. It becomes your, the thing that is like, that you're identifying with as, you know, just as a person. It can be hard. It can be hard to separate yourself from that. So I do think that, Paula was just looking out for her kids' best interest, as difficult as it is sometimes to be like, oh, maybe mom is right. Like, maybe I should listen to her. And every once in a while, it's not a bad thing.
Well, and I felt like they reflected each other, right? Because it looked like Miss Paula did not see herself clearly, because even when she wasn't feeling well, she was still trying to go to work.
Exactly.
And so her daughter's like, you need to rest.
So right.
Her daughter's saying, right, you need rest. She's telling her daughter, you need rest.
Yeah.
But neither one is listening to the other.
Right. Which is what we do. We don't practice what we preach sometimes, but we should. Yeah.
Well, do you think that maybe this working that they're doing is, are they trying to work through their grief? Or do you think that this was like a separate ambition, because they both brought different reasons to the jobs that they were working? What are your thoughts on that?
I do think that it was a way for them to try to work through their grief. In some ways, I think for Flores, it might have been a way to avoid processing her grief, mm-hmm, and truly confronting not only the loss of her father, but also what it means to have really lost someone who functioned very much as her compass, and to then try to redefine and figure out who she is on her own without that. I think she was just trying to avoid it. Same thing for Paula. I mean, Paula thought she was going to have this future with her husband. And so then and she moved to this country because of him. And so it's like, well, what is it that she wants truly now at this stage in her life? It's also, she's also challenged to really rethink what it means to be a woman in her 60s. I think that she thought it was a certain thing, and now she's realizing, well, it's not, you know, and you can start over really at any age.
Well, and I know that you have that, you know, the daughters call Flores at her job, but her mom calls her Yoli. And I've heard Yoli used for Yolanda. And so I really liked how you brought it back, like bringing your culture into this so that we can be a part of this experience, right? From all different angles. And this is for, I'm really curious about your writing techniques, right? Because they're really great the way you fuse them together. And although they're two different perspectives, they're still weaving together. You're not thrown out of the story, right? So you used flashbacks to some extent. And so I found it helpful to understand the present mindset of the characters. Is there a reason you chose this technique or something similar about your characters?
No, I thought it was important to include some background in those instances where I included them. I think they added depth to the relationships, and also give you some understanding as to perhaps the motivation of the characters, like why some things were harder for them to do while others were maybe easier. And hopefully it added to a better just understanding of the character's mindset.
Well, maybe I should rephrase it. I don't, maybe it's not the flashbacks. I think it's memories that when someone's looking at something, because we all do it all the time, right? The reaction that you have to a certain situation might be based on a memory that you had from before. So the memories that you have for both of them, and sometimes it's a memory together and sometimes apart, I thought was really, really effective. When, like many times, like I mentioned before, the mother, it seemed like she was writing a letter to her daughter. She would describe how her daughter made her feel, which made my reaction, interaction with the character more engaging. Was this your intent, or did it naturally manifest when you were writing each chapter?
Yeah, it came naturally as I was writing the characters. I don't outline. I wish I did. I feel like it's so much easier to write when you have an outline. But
I've heard
in some
different
ways,
views.
yeah, exactly. I mean, in some ways, I mean, but no, those things kind of came organically as I followed the character on their journey. Occasionally, there would be times where I would feel like, okay, I have this emotion, but I don't have a scene that kind of goes towards that. So, like, where's this coming from? And then I would have to be like, okay, this is sort of what triggers this. And then in that sense, I would be like, I guess outlining, because I would know that I needed to put a scene somewhere beforehand to make this emotion thing valid. But for the most part, the initial response is that it's either a response to something that I've already written, or it's just something that comes organically, and now I have to actually write the thing, you know.
So how did you know that your story, how did you know where to stop the story? Because I could have read about this relationship on and on to the, you know, all the different as their phases of their lives changed, as things changed, this relationship is interesting. And so how did you know when you wanted to conclude the story for the purpose of the book?
I knew when I thought grief to me kind of tends to happen. I don't want to say happens in seasons, but there are certain periods that are more intense than others. Certain holidays or certain just times of the year that may be more challenging. And so I knew that I wanted it to end. I wanted their season of grief for this period to be over. But I wanted it to end on the potential, the hope for something different the next cycle.
So I'm going to ask this question, okay? Were there any other relationships that you thought about exploring in this book from the characters that you've developed?
Yes. So, yes. Funny enough, one of the characters in the book, a very, very minor character is also a character in my first book, which I think, which wasn't planned either. And so I feel like there may be my world might be like the MCU. It's like, so there might be more characters there that I would like to explore further in future works. We'll see.
Well, I enjoyed reading this book, Melissa, and congratulations on your book. I think a lot of people will enjoy it.
Thank you so much, Amanda. I appreciate it.
Melissa Rivera is the author of the book Flores and Miss Paula. You can find more about Melissa at her website, www.melissarivero.com, and on Instagram at @MelissaRivero_author. Melissa, thank you for speaking with us at Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions.